Mark 3:20-25, Jesus and Beelzebul. And the crowd came together so that they could not even eat. When his family heard it, they went out to restrain him, for the people were saying, "He has gone out of his mind." And the scribes who came down from Jerusalem said, "He has Beelzebul, and by the ruler of the demons he casts out demons." And he called them to him and spoke to them in parables. How can Satan cast out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand.
I mean, this guy. I mean, every day it's something, right? I mean, I'm kind of afraid, even now, after all this time, I'm kind of afraid every morning to hear the news. I don't want to open my eyes. What crazy new thing has he done? You know, and I guess, I mean, really, this is the point we're at. We're at the point where just merely crazy is preferable, right? Because clearly he's capable of doing something that is scary, like dangerous scary. I mean, something that could affect so many people's lives in a very serious way. Some of the things he says don't even make sense. It's like from one phrase to the next, there's a disconnect. He's not even paying attention. I'm always trying to figure out, you know, if he knows what he's doing, you know? Like, is he purposefully trying to get a rise out of people? Is he saying things to mess with people? Sometimes I hear what he says and I'm just like, you know, it's like my brain short circuits practically. I mean, I guess he knows how to get to me, or people like me, or us, right? Because at times, the things he says, they do seem calculated to get at the core of what I care about. What I thought were pretty commonly agreed upon social values and conventions, he just blows them up. And every time he does something like that, I think, okay, this is it. That's the end of him. People, even the people who liked him at first, are not going to go along with this. They're not going to let him get away with saying that. But I need to tell you, it isn't the end of him. And people are not only letting him get away with it, not only going along with him, they love it. They absolutely love it. You've seen the crowds, right? Everywhere he goes, it's like they swarm, you know, or it's like a herd, it's like a pack. Everywhere he goes, they're just all packed in. It's crazy. It's insane. And these herds or packs or swarms of followers, they don't even understand that in the end, they're the ones that are going to be affected by what he's doing most. It's insidious, is what it is. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's evil. It's evil. It's evil what he's doing. It's insane or evil. You know what? It's both, probably. I mean, did you hear what he's doing now? Do you hear what he's doing now? He's casting out demons. Can you believe this? He's casting out demons. People are coming to him and he's driving evil spirits out of people. He just commands them. And demons be gone, and apparently just like whoosh, or I don't know what the demon leaving sound is, wah, or whoosh, or... But seriously, let me ask you this, who can command the demons? You know, who can tell demons what to do and they do it? The devil. Satan. He's the devil. He has to be. A con man, crazy, or evil. This is what they conclude about Jesus. You didn't think I was talking about someone else, right? Maybe a little at first, but no. No. Of course you didn't. You're very smart. Maybe I was a little. Jesus. This is what they conclude about Jesus. You know, it's only chapter 3 in Mark's gospel, and it's already chaos. It's already chaos. This is what I love about Mark's gospel. It moves fast. It escalates quickly. It's the shortest gospel by a lot. It's one-third of the length of Matthew's gospel, but it's fast and it's loud. Mark is like the Ramon song of gospels. Fast, loud, short, but it gets you, you know? You can feel it. And at the end, you're like, what was that about? And you have to listen to it again. I mean, it's chapter 3, and already, you know, Jesus comes, he's healing people, he's proclaiming this good news, he's casting out demons, crowds are following everywhere he goes, and he's already appointed, you know, these 12, you know, these 12 people, like, none of them are qualified, you know, fishermen and whatever, and, you know, none of them are qualified, but he's got them there, and he's doing these things, just chapter 3, and it's even so out of hand that they're even sending people, you know, scribes, the lawyers from Jerusalem to just check out what he's doing. So, right before our text today, he's just appointed the 12. He's just been healing people. There's crowds following him everywhere he goes, and so he and his cabinet or disciples, they go with him back to his house just to get something to eat, to have a little bit of a break. But the crowds, they find out where he is, and they just start showing up. The crowds, they start gathering around his house. There's so many people there, nobody can even move. They can't eat. So Jesus goes out to them and presumably starts back with the teaching and the healing and the casting out of demons. And his family, they see this, and they have to do something. They have to do something. People are everywhere. They're in the streets. They're on the neighbor's lawn. They're standing in the flower beds. It's embarrassing. This is not how things are done. I mean, the family thinks, I mean, sure, who doesn't want a popular rabbi in the family, right? But a rabbi teaches in a synagogue. He's dignified. He reads the Torah. He interprets the reading. He knows the traditional interpretations, and he follows them. Sure, a good one throws a little flourish on it or a contemporary spin to the traditional interpretation. But Jesus, it seems like he's just overturning everything. He's breaking with every kind of tradition, seemingly. He seems like he has no respect for the way things are done. Seemingly no respect from the law. Because the thing is, he'll just talk to anyone. He'll heal anyone. He'll touch them. He'll cast out demons. His family and the people from the neighborhood who know him, they cannot understand what he's doing, why he's doing it this way. They can't understand what he's talking about. So they conclude he's out of his mind. He's crazy. He needs help. They even send the family even comes in to try and restrain him. And the people in power, they cannot comprehend what he's doing. They send these scribes, these lawyers from Jerusalem, from the head office, to look into the situation. And they can only conclude that he's getting his authority from Satan, because he doesn't get his authority from them. I mean, he's not gone through any official channels for any of this. He's not vetted. He's not sanctioned. And what he says, what he does, is completely unorthodox. They're offended. His family and neighbors, the religious leaders, are offended by Jesus and his blasphemies. They're offended by his unorthodoxy. And they're offended by these crowds that follow him. They can't understand how he can do what he's doing. They don't understand why he's doing it. And of course, they react in the most human of ways. If something contradicts what we know to be true, if someone acts in ways that is contrary to how we understand good people should do things, we judge them. Of course, we judge them. Like, what did he say? What are they doing? They must be crazy or stupid. I mean, how dumb do you have to be to do, you know, whatever the person's doing that seems... Or we say, he must be evil. That's just pure evil, what he's doing. Now, you don't have to say it out loud, because I'm not asking anybody, and maybe you don't even think this way, but we're all kind of human. But let me just ask you this. Have you ever even suggested, maybe to others, or just to yourself, or maybe to Audie Cornish in the car while listening to All Things Considered, that maybe, let's say, a powerful American political leader might be crazy or an idiot or maybe evil? But wait, I know you're thinking, like, talk about offensive. Am I comparing Jesus to a powerful American political leader that some might consider crazy, stupid, or evil? Because, you know, you might say to me, and I think you'd be right, that some people's actions, some people's words can be judged. They should be judged. You know, they don't make any sense. They're not very intelligent. They really do seem evil. All right, calm down already. I said you must be right. I said you're probably right. This is getting a little heated for me. Let's just stick to Jesus, can we? Man. I'm sure to his family and the religious leaders that he did seem like he was out of his mind. It did seem like he was using the powers of the devil. Because what he was doing and saying could not be explained by what they thought and how they did things. Jesus challenged all that. He challenged all that, what they thought and things. But at the core of it, what Jesus really challenged was their power. Because even in first century Palestine, the family is the most basic political unit there is. It's not just the immediate family, but people in the household, people around, share this common values, and any member of that family is a representative of that family, and to go out like that, he's defying the conventions of how a family should operate and bringing shame upon his family. He's challenging the power structures in that family. And the church, the people from the temple coming down, the religious leaders, they run the show. They're in charge. Any kind of healings, there's rules about how this is done. It's certainly not done on the street, and it's not done for free, and it's not just done for anybody who comes up. Jesus is completely challenging their power. I think maybe you've heard me talk about this before. Sometimes I go out to the desert, hang out there, and I've been going out to this place, you know, the Salton Sea, and this town, Bombay Beach. It's a very small town, just a couple hundred people, and there's like one place to go there. It's called the Ski Inn. It's this bar, and so I go there because, you know, there's nowhere else to go. It's hot. But like I said, there's not that many people there. So I go in there, and there's one guy that's always there, Bob. His name is Bob. He sits at the end of the bar. And I was out there, and this was, I was trying to remember which mass shooting it was, but I guess it could have been any time, really. And you want to talk about some things that I think can be, some ideals, that some actions that can be really condemned? I mean, gun violence to me is like, I don't get it. I don't get why anyone would not move to legislate, just it seemed like the rampant availability of guns. I mean, this is very real violence, and that something could be done about, and why people would insist on their rights. I mean, do you know, I don't need to tell you this, right? Every time there's a shooting like that, gun sales go up, right? Some ammunition you can't even buy because it just sells out. I mean, it's like, it just breaks my heart. It's like upsetting to me. This is our children. And so this is up on the TV in the bar, and Bob's there. And I talk to Bob sometimes because nobody else is there, and I like to talk. And so I'm like, Bob, I mean, like, can you believe this? Because who couldn't you talk to about that? And he just looks at me and shakes his head, and he's like, you do not get it, do you? And I'm like, no, I don't, Bob. I don't get it. How can people? He's like, no, you don't understand. This isn't about guns. This is about power. You think all the people who go out and buy guns when they feel like their right to have them is threatened. The people who collect these massive amounts of firearms, these gun owners, and insist on their rights and proudly put their NRA stickers on there. Do you think that's about guns? It's about power. Most of these people who are involved in that, who do you think they are? They're some of the people with the least power in this country that there is. They know, they believe that nobody, the people in political power, the people, the business leaders, nobody in America cares about them. They think that the people in power treat them as the punchline to a joke. They dismiss them. They make fun of them. They think they're idiots, ignorant. They have no power at all. And a gun, Bob looks at me, have you ever shot a gun? And I said, yeah. He's like, how did that feel? Powerful. Powerful. He's like, they don't have power anyway. There's no chance they're going to have power anyway. They're not going to land some job. You know, the partner of their dad's firm is not going to write them a recommendation to. They have no access to power or any hope for their children. But they can buy power at Walmart. They can go buy power at Walmart. He's like, there's no way that you're going to change the situation with gun control. You have to give them power. All these people with power, right? They responded to Jesus' challenge. They judged what Jesus is doing. But the people who did not judge Jesus' words or his actions, were the huge crowds that followed him around. The crowds, these people, they were the people without any power. These huge crowds that were so offensive. These crowds are the ones that the people with power, both legal and cultural power, imposed on them. They didn't even seem to understand these crowds, these powerless crowds. These crowds' power wasn't challenged because they didn't have any power. These are the people that heard Jesus' message of absolute forgiveness. These are the people who were suffering and they were healed, who were freed of the demons that possessed them. Because Jesus saw them. Jesus understood them. Jesus sat with them, knew them, and loved them. This is how we are transformed. You know, now, if I ever think somebody, I hear something or I'm talking to somebody, and I think to myself, that person is insane, or what an idiot, or that's just evil. Whenever I catch myself thinking that, I remember Bob. And I try to think to myself, okay, what am I not understanding about this person? What am I not understanding about where they're coming from? Because this crazy thing that Jesus is doing and proclaiming, he's not calling us to get the intellectual or political or theological position right. Jesus is calling us to get the relationship right.